Hey everybody, it's Michelle. I am here to talk to you about our Patreon page. This is the page that you can go to help support our podcast with a monthly donation. When you commit to supporting us, you can get additional bonus content such as extra podcasts, our favorite playlists, our show notes, and eventually we would like to have merchandise to sell like t-shirts and baseball caps, and we would let you have first dibs at those. Of course, because we are coffee moms, we are offering membership levels that are as follows: the coffee membership, the cold brew membership, or the espresso membership. Now, no pressure whatsoever, but if you do love our podcast and you would like to help support it, you can go to patreon.com/messybunmamaspodcast. That is Patreon, patreon.com/messybunmamaspodcast. There you can choose a membership level that works for you. Melissa and I want to thank you in advance for your love and your support.
Messy Bun Mamas. I'm Joe.
I'm John.
I am Malcolm.
Hello.
Hey, everybody.
I'm Melissa.
And I'm Michelle.
And this is the Messy Bun Mamas podcast.
Yay.
So we actually have a continuation of Cammie's story for you all today. You know, we're just all about tearing your heart out and then making you wait a week to fix it right back up again. I mean, not really, but just a little glimmer of hope.
Yes. The healing process. It is possible to heal.
Right. But first, Mama moment of the week.
All right. I will go first. So Joe has been a cuddle bug lately, which I don't hate because I like to cuddle. But the other night we came home from church and he said, I want to watch TV. And I said, oh, that's fine. You can watch some TV. But then it will be bedtime. And he said, well, I want to watch TV with you. I'm like, okay. So I came and I sat down and I was just going to tried to do some one-handed work on my phone. And he took the phone from my hand and he said, no, I want to cuddle with you. Put your legs on the couch. So I put my legs up on the couch and like he wanted to sit on my lap and like wrap his arms around my neck and like lean up against me. I'm like, all right, well, I don't hate this either. So I'll take it, whatever. And he was sitting there watching TV. And then all of a sudden he turned to me and he kissed me on my cheek and he said, I love you, Mommy. You're mine forever. And I said, and you're mine forever. No other little girl is ever going to put their hands on you. Keeping you forever. So I don't know. That was my mom a moment of the week. It was super simple, but it was just, I don't know. It always makes me feel good when he, like, seeks me out for cuddles and stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
Everyone says, oh, one day they'll stop. And I'm like, not if I can help it.
That's super cute, though. It's always nice to have those moments with the boys when they're just like, I love you. And you're just like, forever and ever.
You will never love another.
Right? That's so true.
So how about you? Tell me your mama moment of the week.
So, my mother-in-law came over to my house. And, like, she, like, okay, so I don't know if it's not been clear in this podcast, but our house is not, like, super fancy and, like, magazine clean ever. It's just not.
Ours either.
And especially right now, because Rayla recently drew on the wall with a permanent marker, so they're not all wall. I shouldn't say all wall. I should say about 8 walls three pieces of furniture, a bunch of toys, their table. There's permanent marker everywhere in her house because she somehow got a hold of a... I don't know. I wasn't here, man. I was at work. I don't know what happened.
It didn't happen on my shift. That's what you're saying.
My question to Mike was, how long was she unsupervised for her to color on all of these surfaces? And he's like, 5 minutes. And I'm like, sure she was.
Sounds a little suspect.
Yeah. Yeah, because we can lock her in the living room with the gate. So I don't have any problem with him like locking her in there because it helps her like learn how to self-play and self-soothe, and like she doesn't need us 24/7. So whatever. I'm not like mad about it or anything. I can hear somebody like, "He left her alone?" So, and by somebody I mean my mother.
I mean, he's still in the house, right? It's not like he left the house to go grocery shopping or anything.
No, he's in the house. Yeah, for sure. So, my mother-in-law comes over, and she mentions, like, that my toilet is dirty. And, like, my water is, like, it's super hard, and, like, we're supposed to use water softener, and I don't because I think water softeners are stupid.
And expensive.
And there's no reason for them. Like, there's no reason for them.
We don't have one either, for the same reason. So
the water's just hard, so our toilet is, like, it's not white for very long, and then it's dirty or whatever. But she, like, made a snide comment about, like, how our toilet was dirty. So, like, I was, like, offended. And the thing is, like, my in-laws do not keep, like, a magazine-perfect house. So, like, the fact that she even said anything to me, I was just, like... whatever, lady. So then today, I, of course, have to clean the bathroom because she, like, shamed me. Low-key shamed me.
Right.
And, like, 14 times during the day, my little buddy Malcolm comes in. "Bah, you're doing such a good job. Bah, you're working so hard. It smells so good in here." But I'm, like, on my hands and knees trying to scrub the stupid lime buildup out or whatever's in the water that's making it the bane of my existence today. Right. I'm just trying to scrub it out of the toilet. Like, I have a pumice stone. Like, I'm just, this is ridiculous. Like, I don't know why I care what this woman thinks about my toilet.
Right.
And he's just, like, coming in, and he came over at one point, and I was, like, sweating. I have, like, rubber gloves up to my elbows, and he's just like, "Bah, you're working really hard." I was like, "Yeah, buddy, I'm just trying to clean the toilet." And he goes, "But why? We poop in there."
I love how he thinks.
And I just wanted to throw down all the stuff I was doing and be like, "Yes, can somebody tell me why?"
Right.
So it made me laugh. I was just like, "You're right, buddy. We do poop in there. But we need a clean place for your poop to land." And the thing is, like, it's not even dirty. It's just, like, the lime built up has just... I don't know if it's lime. I do know that I used lime remover, and it, like, really helped, like, a lot today. But there's just, like...
it's a
lime
buildup.
It was exhausting, and I was, like, so angry. But he was just like, "All we do is poop in there. Like, who cares?" Apparently your grandmother... your grandmother cares.
It's important to her. No, I get the same thing about our bathroom, our bathtub, because the former owners of the house, when they were doing the seal around the edge of the wall in the bathtub, they used like some cement type stuff or something like that. Well, it gets all moldy and gross, and like you have to scrub super hard to get it out, and it's not like my favorite job to do. So I understand where you're coming from, because all of my family members will come in and offer me advice on how I should be taking care of that. I'm like, "Well, here's a scrub brush for you."
Right. Have at it. Would you like a toothbrush? I got some extra ones under my sink. Feel free to scrub.
Right. I'll get you baking soda, bleach, anything you want. I'll run to the store. Let me know.
And the thing is, like, I don't know. She's old, so I don't even have the satisfaction of taking a picture of it and texting it to her and being like, look what I did today.
Right.
No. By the time she comes over again, I'm sure it's going to be, like, built up all over again. What?
Right.
Malcolm's got my back, though.
That is frustrating. I do appreciate that these little boys come in, like, riding in to tell, like, just give you all the praise that we need.
Tell me I'm amazing.
Nobody else will give us.
Tell me I'm amazing. That's all I'm looking for. Tell me I am amazing.
Right.
It was just so funny. He's like, but we poop in there.
Exactly. He's not wrong.
Not wrong. He's so not wrong.
Why is everybody so bent on having a perfectly white toilet?
I don't know. And the thing is, whatever. I'm telling you, I was so mad. I was like, did you seriously, like, come in here and, like, complain about the cleanliness of my toilet? Like, and she didn't even, like, low-key say it. Like, all six of us are sitting in the living room, and she's just like, man, your toilet's dirty. And I was like,
you know where the door is, right?
Listen here, old woman.
You're lucky you birthed your son, my husband, right now. Otherwise, you would not be welcome in my home.
That's my mama moment of the week.
Oh. Good old Malcolm to save the day.
So, we're excited to welcome Cammie back.
Yeah.
And today we're going to kind of just let her give her amazing story of, like, how she healed from the loss of her sweet baby girl. Mm-hmm. And hopefully this is helpful for you. Like I told Cammie, like, I had never heard the story, like, in its entirety, but I've heard the healing. I've heard the healing story, like, at least snippets of it. Mm-hmm. And it's definitely been impactful and powerful. Mm-hmm. Having not experienced a loss of that kind, just to hear, like, I couldn't imagine. I always tell people, like, I'm not emotionally strong enough to lose a pregnancy. Mm-hmm. I feel like Mike and I always say, like, whenever somebody we know, like, loses, like, has a loss, we both just look at each other and we're just like, I think we're just mm-hmm. too broken.
Yeah, you don't even want to go through it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just, wow. So just to heal this, hear the story of mm-hmm. your healing. Super mm-hmm. excited for our listeners to have the opportunity for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm so. Did you have something to say?
Mm-mm.
Okay, I'm going to jump in then. But
that's
no,
fine.
It's bubbling in me to share this because I think it's so important to just not stop at where I left it. Just the pain
and the grief.
Yeah, yep. And thankful that I'm not still in that frozen state. I think grief, you can go through periods and you can feel very stuck in your grief for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll pick up from when I had my crisis of faith, and that is essentially when I found out that the baby was in the 1% chance. I struggled with feeling like, who wrote it? Was it Solomon who wrote Ecclesiastes? Like, mm-hmm. vanity, vanity, everything's vanity. So yeah, I was having my own, like, biblical books that I was writing in my head. And I was just like, life means nothing. Why pray? He's going to do what he wants anyways. I struggled with God's sovereignty. Like, why am I praying? He's just going to do what he wants. He's not going to hear me. So I'm mm-hmm. praying for someone. Sister so-and-so, you're still going to church and they need this and you're praying for that. And I was like, well, he might heal you if he wants to. I was so cynical. All mm-hmm. of that was going through in my head. Like, and I was really, really struggling.
But those are real feelings.
Real
right.
feelings.
Yeah.
I know I'm not the only one who feels it, but it was pretty rampant and yeah. constant. And I, mm-hmm. you know, I'm praying and not knowing, is he here? So just, it was really affecting my walk. I feel like we all have these very personal relationships mm-hmm. and you personally hurt me. You personally let me down, God. And it's so interesting because I know that our relationships with God are often built in how we deal with crisis and in the hard times, because what's in us comes out. So what I love is that truly, not that I love going through it, it is really a time for growth and a time to actually figure out what you're made of, and often is disappointing. I was mm-hmm. disappointed, not that I was hurting and struggling, but with what was in me, what was coming out of me. And I don't know, I wanted to do crazy things. I wanted to, like, crash my car. And what's the worst thing I could do? And my brother, who is you know, coming back to Christ, my brothers, he's like, I laugh when you tell the story because, you know, when I think of that, I'm like, I'm smoking this, I'm drinking this, I'm doing all this. And you're like, I wanted to crash my car. And like, so keep in mind, like, I didn't go. And I think what happened is I'm constrained by this gospel. I'm one of those people who I'm a leader in my church. I'm doing all this thing, but I'm struggling with, oh, what can I do to express my rage? Because it was past anger. I lived with this rage that just continually was there. I woke up in the morning, I felt it, and it became a very heavy presence on my chest to the point that I thought, oh my gosh, I might be having a heart attack one day. Like this, if this doesn't go away, this can't be good. So it would just sit there and I'd wake up and go to sleep, rage, 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 try to be nice to my husband. I'm not like a raging, terrible person, but at the same time, like I didn't have patience. I was intolerant. I was empty. I was upset. I was like a bear.
Did you even find yourself, and if you didn't, that's fine, but just looking for things to be mad about?
Yes. It caused so much conflict in our relationship too, because I'm mad again because he's the closest person to me. We had no kids at that time, so it was us, right? Mm-hmm. So even at home, silliest things, and I'll never be able to understand how that man has dealt with me. In our relationship, he's beauty, I'm the beast, and I own it. I have to be honest, I don't know how his name actually is Ahizele, and it actually in Nigerian means gift from God. And like, he is, like, I've always told God that I'm so grateful because mm-hmm. Oh my word, I was a mess, you guys. And let me tell you, I'm on my way to church one day, so I backed out of everything that I was doing, all the ministries I was doing. It was too much for me. That is how I coped. I couldn't do any of it. I couldn't be visible. I wanted to be invisible, mm-hmm. to not be alive. Like, that's what I was saying. I was struggling with that. So people would pray for me, would come around me, and just, oh goodness, that's the church I go to. And so laying of hands and sharing each other's burdens. Yeah. And I'll never forget that. Like knowing the church, my church family loved me. Like I could feel that. But at the same time, I wasn't okay inside. I was going to church with my helmet on. Mm-hmm. And it's actually kind of one of the worst things you can do. But when you go to church and you leave the exact same way you came, mm-hmm. when you are in the presence of like the Almighty God who can make a difference, but no thanks, God. I was glad to be here, flitting in and flitting out. Like, again, I was showing up so that I didn't cause others to stumble, maybe.
Right.
Maybe that's why I was showing up. Do you get what I'm saying? But I wasn't. And I wasn't doing anything drastically crazy, as my brother helped me help point out. But I was not fine in my heart and the anger that sat there or whatever. So I remember my pastor would call, check on me, and I'd be like, Skip, I didn't even want to take his call. I was avoiding. People would pray for me at the altar. And I remember like getting this fake cry. I'd just shake my shoulders and fake cry. And I'd be like, thank you, sis. And then walk away. Nothing. I mean, leaving. Coming the same way. I'd even like go to the altar and like kneel down and like, you know, pretend to pray. Oh, I love you, Jesus, something. And then get up and then leave the altar out of the back door and go hide in the classroom until service. I mean, I was just a mess. You know, those songs on going through the motions. And
yeah,
I was all of it. I was totally all of it. So I'm in the
classroom. You were like committed to going through the motions too. You're not even just like, I'm just going to sit here in the pew and like pray to myself.
No.
You're just like, okay, so I know.
I'm going to go up to the altar because again, I don't want people to like worry about me and stumble. I cared about that. I care about others, but I can't, I'm not glorifying what I did. I'm saying, yeah. And I always tell people like, I'm a grown adult when all of this stuff is happening. I'm grown when I'm doing all of this childish stuff, like hiding and running. And so I'm in a classroom downstairs. I even remember this one service and my friends came to find me after it, like close friends who knew. They were like my bodyguards because people would come around me too much sometimes. And I, mm-hmm. they could tell when I was overwhelmed by it and whatever. And they would be like, hey, Cam, and whisk me away. I love them. I'm so grateful for them. That's part of what helped me go back is I was like, I can't face people. I can't do this. I can't do that person's hug. I can't do this. I can't, you know, and they just knew who to look for and they had my back. And and I remember them coming down and saying, Cammy, and they know me too well. I'm not going to fake. I open the door. Hi, girls. Like, and they come in. They're like, have you been down here? I was like, yeah, because they knew I was starting to hide and whatever. And they just like sat with me. And I remember it was very close to when I had gone back to church. And I think I stayed out for several weeks, you know, healing, quote unquote. You guys can't see my ear quotes. Healing, but I was a mess. I was a wreck. And so I come back just triumphant that I stepped foot in the building and everybody should be applauding me and throwing roses at my feet. And they're downstairs and they're with me. And they were just like, hey, you know, like kind of checking in. We're just kind of concerned about you. And I'm like, I get it. I would be concerned about me too. And that's when I used my Grey's Anatomy line. And I was just like, guys, like, it's like, I can't even explain how much I'm not even together. I'm not even like a human. Like, it is like glue in this, that tape. I like anything can like throw me over the edge. Or, and I remember telling them, like, do you understand how much I don't want to be here? Hmm. Like, do you understand how much I don't want to be here? Like, I was grieving so hard and I was so done. And they just held me. They cried, did all the beautiful things friends do that help, you know. They didn't say anything that would have made me kick them out of the room or anything. And so we made it through that. That's kind of what the series was going on. So this one particular Sunday that was part of my revelatory life-changing Sunday, I'd gone to church and I decided I wasn't going to praise that day. Remember, I was committed to going through the motions, as you said, Melissa, that's so right. I decided I'm done. I'm not going to do anything today. So I tell my husband on the way to church, I look at him and I said, hey, because I had been having this tightness in my chest, you know, for just weeks now. And I was like, hey, I just wanted you to know that someday soon I'm probably going to have a heart attack. I said that to him. I was so serious. I meant it. And he's just driving the car, his hands on the steering wheel. He's looking straight ahead. And he says, okay. And I said, yeah, so I don't know what will happen. I might die or something, but I just wanted you to know, because I have this tightness in my chest and it never goes away. So I'm pretty sure I'm going to have a heart attack one day. And he says, okay. And just keeps driving the car, because his wife is psychotic right now. Like, this is our life. The poor man, the things he dealt with. And we went to church that day, and I decided I was not going to praise him. And so I was done. So I sat there, and gosh, you know, when you're like a worshiper, it's intuitive. I was tapping my foot and I'd be like, stop tapping. I'd be like, right, hand on my foot, because I'm tapping to the song or wanting to like jig a little bit. Like, oh, I love this song. And I'm like, no. And I had to like sit on my hands. I had to sit on my hands because
wow,
I wanted,
you were like committed to, you were just like
committed again to not worshiping.
Yeah.
Well, because I wanted to worship so bad. It was very natural for me. So I was just like sitting on my hands.
So we go to a church that's very like clappy and loud. Yeah. And like, you know, we raise our hands and, you know, yeah. So just to give a little context, like we go to a loud church. So yeah.
So it's culture like to be that way. So you sitting there looking, and I remember I like cross my arms or sit on my hands or whatever, because I was, and it was very interesting because
I remember this is the woman who is smiling and being polite to the nurses while she's going.
It's so true.
So this is like such a drastic like change.
It's not me. And everybody who knows that. So again, I kept trying. I think I was going through the motions because I didn't want to call attention. Mm-hmm. I didn't want anybody to know how badly I was struggling. Mm-hmm. Oh, great. They're going to, because, you know, there's a song called "With the Goodness of God, Your Mercy is Running After." It's right. I had people who I believe would have pursued me. Like sometimes you feel like people just don't see you and they just, mm-hmm. you're just falling off and they don't care. And then there's people who will pursue you. I had some really good people in my life like that who, so my choir director was one of them. I remember when I told her I couldn't do it, she said, okay, baby, but I want you to get back up there one day. I remember feeling like, why don't you just relieve me? You know, I'm dying. Why do you just, it felt like, and you know what else she did? She did not replace me. That choir would get up and sing and they'd have no director. My spot was right there. And I'm sitting there like, why is she doing this? Can I like, what the hell? I'm like, she's killing me. She knows. She did that so intentionally. I love her to this day because that helped me. But I'm watching them, because if they replaced me, I would have felt no need to go back in. They don't even need me. They have a director. And I, you
and
know
she
what I'm
knew
saying?
That, of course.
She did not replace me. I mean, so this particular Sunday where I'm not going to worship, right? It's on this Sunday that they get up and they sing one of my favorite songs, and my friend sings a solo and I adore her. And I forget the way she sang the solo, like she was singing it right to me. And it starts with the line, you know, I've got so much to thank God for. So many wonderful blessings and so many open doors, you know, a brand new mercy. And it's the song by Brooklyn Tabernacle Choir, For Every Mountain. Mm-hmm. For every mountain you've brought me over, for every trial you've seen me through. It's just all about, you know, that's why I praise you. All of it. That's why I praise you. So like, I can't think of one reason to praise him. And then they just start singing about all of these reasons that I have. With no choir director. Beautiful. The anointing. Our church is just, you know, the Spirit of God's moving. And my friend is, oh my goodness, I swear she's looking at me and she's singing each of those. I felt God and I couldn't deny it. I remember like healing over in my seat from like the power of what I was feeling. And in my spirit, I thought, I am acting. I knew I was acting. Everybody gets it. You get it. I'm in pain. But I was also starting to act so childish, if that makes sense, like from God's perspective, probably, right? I was acting so childish. I didn't get my way, and now I'm throwing a fit, and I'm so mad. And again, it wasn't okay. That's what I have to say over and over. I didn't feel that it was okay. I was not okay with you letting my baby die. I was not okay with you letting my mom die. And I couldn't let go of that fact. So that was part of the tightness. It was my holding on to this anger that I can't accept that. I can't accept that. And I remember that service ended and I looked at my husband and of all the things I tell him, the poor guy, when I say, hey, I have something to say, poor him, who knows what I'm going to say. I remember looking at him, I was like, I want to apologize to you as your wife. And he's like, okay. Oh, okay. Toxic, I'm volcano, who knows, I'm sweet, who even knows, poor man. And he's like, okay. And I said, because I went to church today and I decided I was going to worship God. He's like, I noticed, you know, I saw you. And I was just like, and it's because of the fact that I was so angry, and I actually am angry at him. I was like, I'm enraged, and he's not the only one I'm angry at, I think, but I know I am. And I was like, I've never been in this place before. Truly, I haven't had it where I felt angry at God. I think I always allowed myself to not feel angry. I felt like it was wrong to feel angry at God or whatever mm-hmm. before that point. So I was like, this is my first time feeling so angry at him. And I allowed it to get me to the point where I couldn't think of a reason to worship him. I said, but baby, I believe one day we're going to have kids. And I want them to know that we as a family worship God in the good times and in the bad times. We worship God no matter what we are going through. That's what our family does. And he, I remember him being like, whew, like just he felt God, because it was like clearly God did something in my heart, that okay. service. So that was the beginning. The door was opening up. But was the tightness still there? Yeah. And was I still enraged? Yeah. And was I still thinking this is not okay? Yeah. And the other thing I also felt was like, I don't want ministry anymore. I'm kind of over it. Like, hey, I always heard like the sweeter your anointing is, that means you think about anointing oil, like, you know, it comes from olives. What are olives? How do we get the oil? They're crushed. Olives are crushed. So it's like, for leaders to be anointed, they have to have these crushed olives. Like, and I was like, I can't take that. I can't take feeling like God hurt me.
I don't want it. I don't want it.
I know, right? But I heard these things growing up or whatever. Yeah. Every mm-hmm. all sorts of things, right? So I was thinking, I don't want that. I don't want to have to go through that. This is the price I have to pay to be a minister or something. So my anointing oil is sweeter or whatever. Okay. So that's what it was. So I also had this big rejection of ministry. So the service that changed my life. So that was the start of it. And then I remember going to church, another service, and my mind's open more, a little bit more, and I am going to worship from where I'm sitting or whatever. And another heavy flow of the Spirit of God, and I have my tightness there, but I'm gonna worship you because you are worthy. I had basically settled that in my mind. He actually is worthy. He's worthy of my praise, even though this happened. And so I was able to just get there and worship. And this particular service, pastor said, you know what? Our church has had a lot of loss recently. Lots of people, their dad, their moms. It really was a season where a lot of losses were going through our church. So everybody was hurting in many ways. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I want you to come up here. If you've had a loss, I want you to come up to the front so we can pray for you. So I'm in my happy place praising. Immediately I put my hands down, and immediately I do the grown woman thing, and I get down on my knees and I hide in my pew. Hiding.
Right.
Because I was like, I am not. Because again, I had this thing where I don't want to be in front of everybody. And so I want to be so small, and I get back there trying to feel freedom, and then he immediately shut right down and zoom hid. It got to the point where everybody knew I lost the baby, the whole church, and he's looking around, and all of a sudden he starts saying, "Sister Cammy here." He called me from the mic, and he's not like that. He's not trying to shame me. He's just trying to pray.
Right.
Some people are like, I saw her here today.
Like, and you're like, traitors.
And literally, how can I crawl out of the building?
That's without anybody noticing. Yes.
Thinking, how do I crawl underneath these pews and get all the way to the back and get out? Because seriously, I'm not going up there. I'm not. And Sister Cammy, again, oh my gosh, like seriously, he's calling my name. And so now I can't move because if anybody sees me moving, they're going to tell him. Who knew? But what I think what happened is above me, some of my friends knew where I were and they started pointing to the pew I was in. They started pointing to the floor. Because Judas. Literally all of them are traitors. All of you, you had me back and now you're traitors. I really was thinking, okay, I'm going to crawl out and then I'm just going to walk out. Like I just trying to get the courage to walk out because again, I had faked so much. I didn't do anything embrace like outward like that. Mm-hmm. How can I walk out? And what ends up happening is a friend sits on one side of the pew I was in, and another friend sits on the other side. I'm trapped. The traitors, like, unless I go now crawling underneath everybody's feet through the building,
like the army crawl. You're right.
Like, I don't know what was happening. I think they were trying to pray for me or something. They were coming towards me, but I just felt so trapped. And I remember sitting there and being like, okay, I can't go anywhere, and just panicky. And all of a sudden I hear, Sister Cammy, my pastor's gravelly voice. And now I'm like, my God, I'm mortified. My pastor is here. He called my name. I ignored him.
Now everybody knows. Yes.
I'm there.
Now it's a thing. Everybody knows.
They prayed for those people who went up, and then I'm there looking for me. And here I am just hiding. So immediately, like, I'm like, yes, in my small voice, because like I'm embarrassed and I'm doing my fake cry. I'm shaking my shoulders. I'm doing what I know to do. And they're around me, and they're trying to pray for me. And he says, sis, he says, that stuff that's inside of you right now, he said, that stuff is toxic. Talk about your pastor knowing. I wouldn't even talk to him, and he knew what was going on. He said, that stuff is toxic, and that stuff will kill you if you don't let it out. And I'm just like, if he's telling the truth, my little, if you know me, like I clench my little fists when I'm really like holding on to something or upset or feeling something strongly. So my little fists are clenched, and I'm just like hearing him, and real tears are starting to come now. I'm like, oh, they're not fake. These are real tears. That's because he's getting to my heart, you know, and he's
somebody like, really sees me.
And he sees me. I thought I was hiding. And he, yes, that was perfect. He really saw me, and he knew. And I didn't know he knew. I thought I was doing such a good job faking. That stuff inside of you will kill you. That stuff is toxic. And I believed him, but I didn't know how to get past it. I truly was thinking, I can't let this go. It got to the point, I have one segue, I'm gonna come right back to that altar moment, an altar in my pew moment. But I had one segue of this is, I'd started to get like kind of reckless, as I said, with how I was starting to feel. There was the sweetest lady in my church. I mean, she's the sweetest lady. And I hated being asked how I was doing, because I always felt pressure to lie. And a bunch of me was lying. I was lying in how I was acting. I would always be like, I'm good. And that was a lie, total lie. So I remember this one day thinking, why are they asking me that? Do they really want me to be honest? Because I'm finally going to be honest then. I look at her and I say, I'm not good. I'm not fine. Okay. Is that what you want to hear me say? I'm not fine. I haven't been fine for a long time. I don't know if I'll ever be fine again. Okay. Do you feel better? Literally, it's what I said to the sweetest lady in my church. And then immediately I thought, she's the sweetest lady in the whole church. I mean, done nothing to me. Like, I love her. What is my problem?
Now I'm a jerk.
Now I'm a jerk. You hate when you do something you have to say sorry for. It's better when you feel like you have the upper hand and you're better than everybody else. But anyways, I'm like, now I gotta apologize to this lady. I'm like, my eyes open wide because I cannot believe I let it out. But that was me being truthful in that moment. Mm-hmm. And she looks at me and not even flinching. Not even like I thought, oh God, I'm gonna make her cry. I have to go fix this. Like I literally panicked right away. And she looks at me unfazed and she says, that's okay. Big smile. Because one day you will be. And I believed her. I like felt she really meant that. I didn't feel that way then, but she really meant that one day I'm going to be okay. And I felt this hope start to rise up that I'm going to be okay one day, like one day. So this is my one day. I'm at the altar. Pastor's found me and is just right there beside me. The church flocks in because I literally start to break. I start to cry. And this is genuine. And what do? In our church, they flock in because they're praying for you. They're laying hands on you. They're loving you. And I'll never forget. Literally after, too, when I looked around, the entire church, you guys, talk about trying to be conspicuous, they stopped. The entire church was around me, and they were in different areas just praying, and I was who they were praying for. They were warring for me. They were interceding because I was not fine. It was the most powerful thing ever, so try to fake through that. Yeah, right. So I'm genuinely crying. God's genuinely getting a hold of my heart, and I start to feel this, like, war. It's me holding back, me fighting. And I felt like, oh my gosh, this tightness is my resolve and my grit thinking, I will never let this go. I won't be able to forgive you for this, God. I didn't know that's what it was. I literally thought I was going to have a heart attack. And it was like, oh, it's you. It's this resolve. Like I can't. And then I finally was like, you know what? If I'm going to be real, I'm going to be real. So I put my hands down. I look up. I see people around me start to kind of like not know what's going on. I was like, Pastor? And he's like, yes, Sister Cammy. I was like, okay, if I'm going to do this, I have to ask you some questions that are really, really bugging me, and I have to talk to you. And he's like, okay. I was like, can we do this right now? He said, yep. So we're like there. People are like, okay, they don't know what's going on because they're praying for me to like fall out in the spirit.
Right.
And I stop everything, and I'm like, We need to have a conversation. We need to talk. So my personality, though, because I'm logical like that.
You need to process.
Christians or whatever. I'm very emotional, of course. But no, I need to process this. I need to get this out if I'm going to be fine.
Yeah.
And it's so sad because I used to know exactly. I asked him 3 questions. I'll never forget that. And I used to know exactly what those questions were perfectly. And I've told the story before. I actually have it recorded, so I have to go find it somewhere, what my specific questions were. But I essentially was asking him about being a leader and this whole suffering thing and, like, why I, you know, the whole, like, you know, you think you're a good person. Like, why is he putting me through any of that? Like, how can I remember saying, how can I go back and do this leadership thing knowing that I'm going to suffer again? And, you know, cause life is not guaranteed. It's the Bible says it rains on the just and the unjust. And, you know, and I remember him answering me, he answered each one of my questions very satisfactory, to the point that I felt like my wall come down more and more and more. And it wasn't, and it was a God who gave me answers. And he said something like, God never, ever guaranteed or told us that we wouldn't suffer. That's a belief that I think we have, but he never promised you that. That affected me because it's true. I'm mad at you, but you never told me that I would never suffer.
Right.
So that affected me. And each question, as I said, I can't recall each one I asked, but they were very specific to me and my struggle and where I was. And I remember I got to the end where, like, I'm just like, okay. I don't have anything else I'm holding on to. I agree with you that, like, I can't. And I remember feeling, he told me about his loss of his mom and how he was so mad at God for a little bit. And he just knew exactly where I was. He just saw me completely. And I just did not even recognize it, and probably could have benefited if I talked to him sooner in his office. And I skipped his call, but, like, I was so fighting and stubborn. And I remember this lifting happening of, like, okay, he's addressed all of, I just felt a peace come over. He's addressed everything that I was struggling with. And it's true. I there's no guarantee in this life that I'm not going to hurt again at all. And God didn't promise me that. And I don't know where I got that idea or that belief from. Most of us do. If we're good Christians, we're not going to go through stuff. And that's not true at all. And so it just started to really chink my armor, I guess. And I just remember my hands, my little fist being up, and I finally opened my fingers, my fists that were clenched, holding on to this anger and bitterness and resentment and toxic stuff just started to flow down my fingers. And I was just like, okay. And over, I said, okay, like, I let go. I give you my anger. Okay, I give it all to you. I can't do this anymore because I've been fighting for so long and I was so tired of it. Okay. And that's all I could say again and again was okay. And just give it to him. And I, guys, in that moment, that tightness for the first time in months, it was instantaneous. It left. It totally lifted. I actually genuinely felt God. I genuinely had an experience, like, with God at that altar. People were, like, right there. And it was different. My countenance changed. There was sincere joy. Gosh, was that the only part of my journey? No, that was a huge part of me actually probably releasing God from the grip that I had him in, the, like, chokehold I had him in or something, like, where we were mm-hmm. stale. I wasn't going anywhere. I wasn't doing anything else. And I wasn't trying to even fix it. I was just like, I'm not letting this go. So that resentment, that offense that I felt towards him and not holding on to it, that was part of my healing process when I finally, I would say, forgave God and just kind of released that and let that go. Oh, it's so amazing how different I felt after the toxicness kind of left me or whatever. Mm-hmm. That was it. Like, that was the pinnacle of, like, okay, now I'm on a healing journey. And it's so interesting how when you go through things that are really hard, I always look at it as your roots just grow down deeper and deeper and deeper. And I did go on. I went on with my degree and everything. And I went on to, I'm a licensed professional counselor. Like, that's what I do now. And I went on to, I help people daily. And I love it and I enjoy it. But what happens is when you go through things, it makes you more empathetic. Mm-hmm. Like, you just really get it. Like, you get it. You get pain. You get hurt. You don't have to go through the same loss they went through to, like, relate if you've been through something that's really hard. Mm-hmm. So I think that it really grew me, developed stuff in me. And in terms of the meaning, that's what I was looking for. Mm-hmm. The why. I found that it's super appropriate to ask God why. Christ asked why on the cross. Like, mm-hmm. it's okay to not know. It's okay to wonder. And I think that as a person who struggles with anxiety, like, that's totally in my history. I totally struggle with anxiety. As a person struggling with anxiety, one of the things to help is to learn how to tolerate uncertainty. And as a planner and a perfectionist, all the other things that I have, I'm the worst mix in the world. All these features that are being, I want to know.
The controller, yeah.
I want him to guarantee this would never. I remember saying that. I tell him, he can't do this to me again. I need to guarantee. And my pastor had to really, like, talk me down from that. Like, I mean, I was going around with him. Like, I was still, it felt like I was at Jacob, whose name became Israel. Am I crazy? Mm-hmm. Who was wrestling with the angel. Mm-hmm. Like, I was fighting and God was using my pastor, like, to, like, for me to get these human answers that I needed or whatever. But it's the most miraculous thing. It's healing. And again, I'm so very honored that it turns out that I wasn't infertile. like I, like, you know, that it's a whole different situation. Mm-hmm. Of course I obviously had a pregnancy. So that is true that I wasn't, but I started thinking everything that could possibly be wrong with me. So it was, guys, it was the most crazy ride of my life. And it's a part of my story and a part of my testimony. And, I one time I was like, okay, God, do you want me to be the grief and loss champion of the world? Is that what it is? You just want to take everybody? You're gonna take Ahi now? I literally was convinced my husband was gonna die because he was the last one that needed to die for me to like have no one that meant something. You know what I'm saying? I was
mm-hmm. just, your mom had just died.
Mom had just died and the baby. And I was like, okay, my husband's next then. And then I've seriously had
nothing.
I'm gonna be alone. It was just so much. My brain was thinking so much. So so that's my story. Wow. That's my story of just the healing that came out from it and all that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining us for the Messy Bun Mamas podcast. If you can't wait to talk to us more, then hit us up on social media. We are on Pinterest, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, and YouTube at Messy Bun Mamas podcast.
You can also reach out to us on our website at www.messybunmamaspodcast.com or email us at messybunmamaspodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for joining us. Have a great week.
I am Messy Bun Mamas.
This is Messy Bun Mamas podcast.
This is messy poop.
Messy buns, you silly.